It was a miserable 3+ quarters for James Harden Saturday night. He set an NBA playoff record by missing his first 15 shots before scoring 14 in the fourth to close out the Jazz in a thriller 104-101. And after game three, Harden said he was going to keep on shooting.
0-15, 14-15, 15-15. My job is to go out there and produce and being aggressive in attack mode. Nothing changes.
Did James Harden's game three struggle and his finish make you guys feel better, worse, or the same about him moving forward in this playoffs?
It made me feel much, much better because I don't think that James Harden of 2017 would have persevered through this game and kept playing his game. As Paul pointed out, like he kept driving, he kept attacking. He didn't start settling for easy threes. He is a more complete and more mature basketball player. And then part of that is, I think, Chris Paul's influence, both on the court and off. I think Chris Paul just kind of kept everything on an even keel throughout that game. So I feel actually better about their ability to slog it out with tough teams.
I feel about the same. I like that Harden kept attacking the basket, but this is a Utah Jazz team that's just not on your level. This was the natural conclusion of Saturday night's game. They can't hit free throws. They can't hit three-point shots. They're going to lose when Harden has a bad night like that. I wonder when the next game like this for Harden happens, because over the last two playoffs, he's had two games like this. Where he has just been absolutely dreadful from the field.
Steph Curry, the difference is Steph Curry's had some really bad shooting performances in the playoffs too. He's been 3 for 16 in the finals last year.
And Paul George was not very good, and they would not get the same criticism, I imagine, that Harden would. But I'm always going to have my eyebrows perked up for the possibility of one of these Harden duds. Because against Golden State, Golden State's going to take advantage of this.
Right.
But
the point I was trying to make was that Steph Curry has other guys on his team that can pick up the slack much more easily.
A lot of other guys.
Right.
Not just Paul.
That's where the criticism falls completely on James Harden. And sometimes it's been justifiable, but every time he has a poor shooting performance, it can't be like, well, if James Harden's going to shoot like that, he's not championship material. Well, what happens when Steph Curry shoots like that? But that's right. He's got three other all-stars around him.
They can't afford a game like this from him moving forward. That's the bottom line. Because if it happens against Golden State, they'll lose that game. Yeah. That will be one of the games that they lose.
Right. Which if you're anticipating sweeping the Warriors, I hate to burst people's bubbles, but yeah, it's not going to happen. But I think I took from that game. I wasn't that upset with Harden's performance. Like, it was bad shooting. Like, other than that,
he kept going.
He wasn't being sloppy. He was playing on defense, except for the times that he wasn't trying to get back. Like, I actually felt pretty good about his performance. It was just a bad shooting night.
Here's the one spin zone for someone if they want to say, hey, the Rockets can still win against the Warriors on an off night by Harden. Do you remember James Harden's stat line in game 5? He was 5 of 21 from the field, 0 of 11 from outside. He had 6 turnovers as well. He was able to get 19 points along the way. But in that Game 5 win where Chris Paul played really well until the hamstring destroyed itself, he actually sucked in that game.
The defense was awesome, and can it be that way against Golden State? We shall see. I do feel a little bit better because, as Seth has been mentioning, Harden kept at it in Saturday night's game and did not fold in any way. Elsewhere in the NBA, the Raptors hammered the Magic last night. Blazers cruised by the Thunder. Both now are a game away from advancing to the second round. Celtics eliminate the Pacers 110-106. The Warriors in another game 4 pull away from the Clippers 113-105. And Klay Thompson discussed the importance, take a listen to this closely, of winning this series quickly.
Closeout games are always the toughest. Game 5 on Wednesday at home. You know they're going to let it all hang out. What do you got to do to end this series?
We see our opponent 3-0, so we don't want to give them any more rest days. Same with us. We don't want to extend the series any longer than we need to, because every game is so pivotal in the playoffs, and we'll give our fans a show to redeem ourselves from last time we were in Oracle, because we owe them one.
How about 3-1, Clay? How about that? How about as simple as that? How about not talking about your next opponent? How about you just try not to blow 3-1?
I think the Clippers just don't have enough horses 3-1. For that to make
3-1.
Anything
That's the same
happen
thing they said about the Cavs.
At this point.
Patrick Beverley is a better version of LeBron James. Skip Bayless even said it once.
I think that the fact that Steph Curry was getting into foul trouble and just didn't look like himself the other night, like it wasn't as bad a performance as James Harden. Partly because, like I said, he's got all these other guys around him to keep him from being the focal point of having a bad night. I think that the Warriors are appropriately nervous about the Rockets. They're not scared of anybody. They know that the Rockets present a certain kind of challenge to them that other teams simply don't. But yeah, they want to go into this fresh. I also wonder with the Warriors too, because the Warriors are pretty damn adept at adjusting their style of play on the fly, and they're watching these playoff series, and they're watching what the Jazz are doing to Harden, that strategy, and they've seen that the Jazz weren't really crisp with it the first couple games. And this last game, it was a combination of going back to their old defenses, but also running their new defenses a lot more aggressively, that the Jazz were effective. And I'm wondering, you know, Klay Thompson wants to be sure that those guys, that the Warriors have enough time to really adjust to how they're going to defend the Rockets.
If the Rockets win tonight and finish off the Jazz, they'll have at least 4 days off, if not five, before the second round series, most likely against Golden State. Next headline, the Astros clawed all the way back from a 9-1 deficit against the Rangers. Rubber game of a three-game series. Bases loaded in the ninth. Sean Kelly facing Robinson Chirinos.
A swing and a miss. Strike three, and Sean Kelly indeed locks this one down for the Rangers.
Unfortunately, the Rangers take the series courtesy of the Rangers television network. They take the series with the wins on Saturday and Sunday. They hammered Gerrit Cole and Colin McHugh for 9 runs on back-to-back days. What was your biggest takeaway from the series?
That Mother Nature was out to get the Astros. There's all kinds of just tomfoolery in the outfield, and also defensive errors with I'm trying to make excuses for Gerrit Cole and Colin McHugh. And there you can blame the wind in that damn stupid ballpark up there to a certain degree. But just that you had bad performances out of Gerrit Cole and Colin McHugh, and that's all there is to it. Yeah, look, Gerrit Cole. It's fine if you're tipping your pitches, but you'd also need to be able to locate the ball anyway, even if they're like, okay, if anything, tipping your pitches when you have zero control might have actually helped you out, because they're expecting, you're like, oh, I know where his slider's going to be. Oh, no, that's completely different.
I'm annoyed by the tipping pitches excuse, because I feel like it's a convenient one used by all pitchers so that they can be resistant to the pitch clock as much as they possibly can. Here's my takeaway from the series, guys. I'm annoyed by the Rangers, because the Rangers should not be 12-8. The Rangers should not be a half game back of the Astros in the American League West. Yet they're 4-2 against the Astros thus far this year. They have a team OPS of 779. That's 14th in baseball. A team ERA of 5.16, which is 25th in baseball. They have a run differential of 9. They're not good. They have three guys that are hitting over 250. How the hell do they keep beating the Astros? That's how I feel.
It's annoying. I take the starting pitching for granted a little bit, in that I expect them to pitch well every night, and at worst, I expect them to keep them in games. And so when you go back-to-back days when they're just getting crushed, it's just something that we're not used to at all.
There's two elements to this. One, that the Rangers are a better hitting baseball team this year. They're a smarter hitting baseball team. They're more patient at the plate. But two, it's that, look, if this were Gerrit Cole and Colin McHugh having their best stuff and getting shelled like this, I'd worry about it. But they very obviously just had off days. And the elements were at least a little bit of a condition. That one ridiculous, that pop-up, that Joey Gallo pop-up,
yep,
was in the air for 7 seconds.
Yeah, weird
seven
play.
7 seconds. Nobody in the infield knew where it was. Carlos Correa didn't know where it was.
They're all
Alex
racing.
Alex Bregman didn't
end.
Know where it was. It was just a weird, weird day. I mean, and it hurt the Rangers, too. Delino DeShields on that Rosa Correa hit didn't know where the ball was.
Diaz.
Oh, it was Diaz? Okay. And then Springer in the first game had one out in right field where he completely lost the ball. The wind was really bad this week. So I write those off completely, other than that I, like Mike, am having a little bit of a flashback to a couple years ago when the Astros just couldn't beat the Rangers. It scares me now.
It's annoying, yeah, yes. You see those uniforms and a lot of the same players. It's bothering me. Next headline, draft week finally here for the Texans. It is the biggest week of the offseason. We are all over it all week long. And the big topic all offseason has been this. How do you fix the Texans' offensive line? GM Brian Gain gives his thoughts Thursday on the offensive tackles in this draft.
I think there's varying portions in this draft at tackle where you could get a starting caliber player both in day one or day two. I think there's some contributing level players there in the mid rounds where they could be versatile swing players for you. there's some players at various portions in this draft at tackle where you see some flexibility to go play guard. So when you're thinking about managing your game day roster, there's seven players who dress. Some of those mid-round tackles have the ability, we think, maybe to be possible tackle guard types. So you save a spot as it relates to special teams. So I think there's some varying points, obviously, first round, day two. And then there's portions in day three, the early portion of day three, where you can get some of those versatile swing guys when you're dressing only seven for game day.
Jeff Van Gundy said Sunday during one of the playoff games that he wants two offensive linemen plus two cornerbacks. With the offensive line.
NBA analyst Jeff Van Gundy.
You just
former NBA coach.
You just mentioned that, like you're citing a serious opinion by a draft
analyst. Jeff Van Gundy says two.
Should we take it more seriously than Pete Prisco? And should we take it more seriously than Peter King?
He was like having fun. He's like, two offensive tackles, two cornerbacks, Super Bowl.
I think he believes it. So Van Gundy says two offensive linemen. What's the best way to fix the offensive line this week? What can they realistically do?
They can take an offensive lineman in the first round, and they can take an offensive lineman with one of their two picks in the second round. And I think that Brian Gain is being completely truthful there when he says there's somebody that's going to be taken in the second or third or fourth round as an offensive tackle that's going to be a starter. It's just a lot harder to figure out who it's going to be. So you got to shoot your shot. If you want a couple of tackles that you can trust long term here, you're going to have to keep drafting guys. So one in the first round. Unless there's like a ridiculously stupid run on offensive tackles in the first round. One in the first round, one in the second round. And then a cornerback in the second round, too.
Okay.
I'd be really surprised if the first and second round picks, all three of those guys, aren't a combination of an offensive tackle and a cornerback. It's going to be either two cornerbacks and one offensive tackle or vice versa.
Or vice versa. Two cornerbacks, one tackle.
I feel the same way. If I'm Brian Gain, if there's one tackle I like, I trade up and I make sure I get him. That's how I fix the offensive line. And if it does come at the expense of, you know, having two shots at offensive linemen in the draft, so be it. You want to get the guy you like. You don't want to get the guy that's there and available to you if you don't really like him.
Yeah. Mike, Seth, and Paul on a Monday. We are proud to be part of the J.J. Watt Charity Classic, which is coming up very quickly here. So this is coming up in a week and a half, not this Saturday, but the following Saturday, May 4th at Minute Maid Park. It's all starting at 6 o'clock. JJ and his teammates are going to be in both a home run derby and a softball game. I've been. It's always a lot of fun. Over $1.3 million has been raised for the JJ Watt Foundation, which provides funding for after-school athletic programs. You can buy tickets now at tickets.com. Saturday, May 4th at Minute Maid Park for the JJ Watt Charity Classic. If the Texans were doing what the Cardinals reportedly maybe doing at number one, I would be wanting to basically just basically jump off a bridge.
What are they doing? What do you mean, like just drafting Kyler Murray?
Not that. Here's Pete Prisco of CBS with what he's hearing with the number one overall pick and the Arizona Cardinals. So the Cardinals, they're rumored to be taking Kyler Murray. I think they'll take Kyler Murray, but Pete Prisco is hearing some different things.
Initially, the ownership pushed for Kyler Murray. That's that much I know. I was told that. And the reason they did, they're having a hard time selling tickets. Well, they put it out there. Arizona was lukewarm to it. So now all of a sudden, they're pulling back from what I've been told, and they're going to go in a different direction. They're not going to draft Kyler Murray.
If the Texans did something like that,
really?
I would want to fold the franchise.
They just put those feelers out there to see if that was going to sell tickets?
For 3 months.
Okay, this is even dumber than you think it is, Mike. This is even dumber than you think it is. You know why? Because people don't buy tickets based on if you might draft a quarterback. What the hell? Okay, so it's dumb first off because you shouldn't be basing your decision on which potential guy might sell more tickets in Arizona. That's dumb, especially in a revenue-sharing league where you're making money no matter what. Two, if you were going to follow that idiotic strategy, you wouldn't think, like, that's like saying, hey, I might, it's like going up to a woman and being like, someday I'm planning on buying a really nice vehicle. Do you want to go make out in my Pinto? If your girl asks you, like, what kind of car do you drive? Like, well, someday I'm planning on buying a Ferrari. Nobody's going to buy anything based on that. What the hell are these guys? They can't be that. There's no way they're that dumb. I think Pete got this one wrong. There's no way any human being is that dumb.
My gut feeling is he probably got this wrong, and I think they will go with Kyler Murray number one overall on Thursday night. That's my best guess right now. But if that was true, they would be one of the two or three worst franchises in the NFL.
You know, right there when I was trying, I was struggling to think of, like, okay, a crappy car to name, but I don't want to insult anybody. I thought Pinto, but there's somebody out there driving a Pinto right now. Somebody driving right now is like, I'm driving a 1972 Pinto.
And they're offended.
And Seth, you're a bastard.
Weren't those the cars that had the engine in the trunk, and if you tap the trunk, it would explode?
Oh, so none of those are around anymore.
It's a different variant of the Pinto.
Those are the ones that Ralph Nader made his name on. He's like exposed, really? I guess. I think those are the ones that he exposed that were dangerous to,
I've never heard of cars with engines in the trunk.
Lots of them. The really nice cars do. A lot of them do.
Huh.
Yeah, like when you see like a fancy dude getting into his, trunk and his Ferrari in the hood.
Well, clearly I'm not much of a car person, at least the details on them.
Oh, the Volkswagen Bug had the car in the back too. Sometimes you can see an old Bug, Mike. These are pretty cool, and you see like the actual engine. They'll have the engine exposed in the back.
There's no way I'm making a draft pick at number one overall based on what fans think or the media thinks or anybody else. You gotta figure out, as bad as it would look, you gotta figure this question out. Is Kyler Murray the pick that is in the best interest of the franchise over Josh Rosen? Is he the guy who's gonna give you the best chance to win moving forward?
I think he is.
And if they feel that way, then they can go with him at number one overall.
I think Josh Rosen always fell into that category for me of like guys that if it were a perfect world and quarterbacks weren't so vital and important and like they got drafted the same way as everybody else, give him the late first round, early second round, take a flyer on him. But because quarterbacks are so desperately needed, that's where he went. The fact that people are talking about trading him for a third rounder right there, I think, it tells you a lot about Josh Rosen.
Well, that to me is crazy.
And it's, he didn't have a good rookie season, and it's easy to blame that on the Arizona offensive line. Their offensive line situation is abysmal too. Like in a lot of ways, perhaps worse than the Texans. But even with all that, he still had one of the worst performances by a rookie ever. So I have to look at that and say, all right, well, yeah, I'm not going to expect him to have a good performance in that situation, but there are lots of other guys in bad situations who weren't as bad as Josh Rosen. And then you add to that, like, whatever the reports were about his personality and all that.
I'm still amazed we can have a situation in which a team takes a quarterback in the first round 2 years in a row. I know that people can say, well, you want your teams to be willing to admit mistakes and all that, but that's still incredible to me. It really is. If I'm just imagining myself in, and by the way, it's not like Josh Rosen fell into their lap last year like Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay back in 2006. They traded up for Josh Rosen.
Yeah.
Imagine the Texans a year ago traded up for a quarterback. He had a bad year, but with a lot of different factors that were in the mix for that reason.
Yeah.
And they took a quarterback the next year. I'd be thinking like, listen, I know that things change, but I can't trust you if you're making those kind of decisions.
It's like you bought a Pinto, which the engine is in the front, by the way. It's a gas tank and it's in the rear. No, you get to gas tank. So Josh Rosen's a big fat Pinto.
If you're overreactionary, I would understand how bad it would look to draft Kyler Murray after drafting Josh Rosen. But this wouldn't be going around in the organization if they didn't have something I think valid to base their opinion of Josh Rosen off of. I have a hard time finding any NFL team, especially with the kind of pressure that the general manager of the Cardinals is under, Steve Keim. I don't understand how he would be looking at the draft and thinking to himself, you know what? Like, we're going to stick it out another year with Josh Rosen. This is good for me. He's clearly not feeling that way. There's got to be something to that.
He's like, yeah, because if you're doing triage on your own career, you'd say, all right, good chance I'm going to get fired after this year regardless, and what's my best shot at saving my job? Is it Josh Rosen, who maybe I don't feel as good about, versus like, oh, wow, you drafted Kyler Murray. He worked out really well for us, and you
had the balls to draft back-to-back first-round quarterbacks.
Yeah, you had the guts to say, hey, I was wrong. We're going to go with this guy.